Blog Talk Radio.
La cucaracha. I don't know the rest of the words, and I do apologize to the result musicians because I dropped the ball. Good evening, ghouls. This is Doc Sludge, and welcome to Doc's House of Horrors. I am joined tonight by my faithful and quite awesome companion, Carl Kafer.
Greetings, salutations.
And I gotta hand give a high five to Steve for playing El Cucaracha for this podcast, because tonight's show is killer bugs, killer insects, all sorts of things that just make your day go ew, creepy crawly. So, killer bug movies have been around since like the 1950s, still being made to this day. I mean, we're talking like 2017, they're still making killer bug movies, which is fantastic. So. Actually, I'm going to start off with the first killer bug slash insect slash creepy crawler movie I ever saw. And this was actually my first introduction to Burt I. Gordon. I saw Earth vs. the Spiders on Mystery Science Theater 3000. It is fun, it's silly, it's black and white, and you've got a roaring spider. It's a giant tarantula roaring spider that eats teenagers. How much better can you get than that?
Yeah. You can't get better than Mr. Big.
Burt I. Gordon, I love that man so much.
Yeah.
And of course, he was at the
Big.
Monster Bash, wasn't he?
Yes, he was.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Steve.
I was going to say, yeah, but he wasn't in no shape to be at Monster Bash. Let's just put it that way, to be tactful.
Yeah, he's 95 years old. But there was if my followers have been noticing, I've been putting up Monster Bash videos once a week up on YouTube channel, which is not such a cinema, but they will follow. I will not be putting up Miss Burt I. Gordon's interview on the YouTube channel from this year. I have one from a few years back, which I will definitely put up, because, like I said, Mr. Gordon is not in the best shape. And I just feel, in respect of him, that I think I should show him as older than this. So that will be coming up probably next week. So, welcome to the...
But before we get into Mr. Big, let's let Mr. K talk about his Mr. Back Row.
Okay, well, I just wanted to give a little message to one of our fans, Jimmy Backrow, and that Stephen and I have decided, along with the co-administrators of Film Warren, that yes, you will still be getting the nude pictures of Ernest Borgnine. We've decided at least once a week. So if you have any problem, give me a call.
Well, that was completely random, but it works. that's why I love doing this.
Yeah, here's a question for you, Doc. Wasn't Earth versus the Spider Mr. Big's first giant bug movie?
I think it is. I definitely think it is. And he's done a few of them. Did Earth versus the Spider, also Food of the Gods, which will definitely be talked. And
Marjo. Marjo.
Marjo. Oh,
yeah, Marjo Gortner.
Yeah. And the beginning of the end, which is very, very good. And a little trivia fact about Mr. Gordon and Mystery Science Theater 3000. Out of every director they've ever, Mystery Science Theater 3000, ever put a movie on their show that was made by, did that make any sense? I don't think it makes sense. Oh, well. He's the director
yeah, Bert
with most
was
movies.
On...
Yeah, he was. He had the most movies on Mystery Science Theater 3000 of any director. And he actually said that in his book, The Slight Past Interview. So that was very awesome. So,
let's see, besides the two that you mentioned, I'm trying to think of the ones that don't count for the big bug, just to get out of the way. There's The Colossal Man, War of the
yep.
Colossal Man, and
the
Big Boobs, I mean Giants.
Yeah. There's also the Cyclops. And what was that new Psycho movie he did up last, like 2 years ago?
Oh, what was the name of that?
Yeah, they showed a preview of it. He was actually brought in as an executive producer by the people who were making it. It's not Bert's style, but it was.
I think the top three that's been on the most on the Saturday Night Live is number three is K. Gordon Murray. Number two is Sandy Frank, and then number one, Bert I. Gordon.
Yeah, Sandy. If you know it's from Sandy Frank, you know it's going to be an interesting watch. I said that with love and sarcasm. Yeah. Have you guys seen To the Spider?
It was okay.
Yeah, I mean definitely. You know, I remember seeing most of these when we talk about the 50s films from Chiller Theater when I was a kid. So, yeah, I mean, I've seen every one of these at least once. Not that it all coalesces in the brain, but, yeah, I know I've definitely seen Earth versus the Spiders.
Well, I got to tell you, the logic in Earth versus the Spider really isn't that good. It's kind of ocular, but that's makes it fun. Like, for example, our said giant spider gets knocked unconscious by, I think, gas or something. And then they drag this giant spider's carcass into their gym, their high school gym. Now, if you're having bands or like at your high school gym, would you want the carcass of a giant spider sitting in there? No, because the music wakes the spider up and all hell breaks loose. So, yeah, but I absolutely adore them.
Well, if they were band geeks who played the organ and like Frank Zappa, yeah, I'd put a big carcass in there.
No.
Ooh.
No.
Yeah, the 50s were definitely life with big bug movies. So let's kind of move on a little bit far away from the Earth vs. Spider. Now, one of my all-time favorites, I've actually seen this movie before it was on MXV3K. From the 1950s, is The Deadly Mantis. And believe it or not, this is a universal horror sci-fi film. It's not really recognized as one because it's just not as good as, like, Creature from the Black Lagoon, but it's a fun movie.
Is this the one with Peter Graves? Or is that beginning of the end?
That's beginning of the end.
Okay.
Yeah. Giant Mantis and Island of Dr. Moreau are the only two films out of the Universal Monster series that Universal doesn't claim as being part of the main monster series.
That's right. And mostly because of the huge, huge cheese factor in Deadly Mantis. But did you say Island of Lost Souls?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
That's Island of Dr. Moreau, basically.
Yeah.
That's the first version of Moreau.
Island of Lost Souls is just kind of, it's one of those movies that was really shocking for the time it was made, so Universal's kind of like, I don't know. Not so much. But I would definitely suggest taking and definitely watching the Deadly Mantis. The special effects are pretty corny because the mantis is mostly done with a marionette and like a puppet on a stick. There are some really cool shots though with it. And the Mystery Science Theater 3000 version used to be on YouTube, but now you officially have to go buy the DVD to actually see it. So give that a
try. Not a bad thing.
Well, not a bad thing at all. But I don't just love it. It's fast paced, it's fun, but it's really, really silly.
But you know, think that most of the movies from that era, when we talk about the giant insects, you know, were silly. I mean, there were a couple, of course, that were. But I mean, you get into Tarantula, you get into any of these, they all tend to be fun, silly. You know, that's part of the genre at the time. You know, I mean, I love every one of these. Love them to death.
Yep, and actually, you know what? Since we're kind of like Buggy the Bugs, how about we hop over? Good fun. Over to the beginning of the end with Giant Grasshoppers, again made by Burt I. Gordon. I remember Captain USA showing this on the USA Channel when I was a kid. The sound of the grasshoppers or the locusts, whatever they call them in this movie, scared the poop out of me. I was literally hiding behind my grandparents' couch, occasionally peeking out, watching this movie, and my grandfather is just looking at me, shaking his head like, you're getting scared over this.
Well, you know, the one thing about that movie that I was always impressed with was the rear projection.
Yes.
I thought for the time, the special effects of that were pretty damn good. And the rear projection of those locusts going up the building, that's impressive.
You mean the high-tech scene where Bert forgot to shut off the freaking camera and the grasshopper climbs up on top of the building and then onto the clouds on the top of the postcard which they were using?
Yes.
Yep, that's one of the
things. I loved it. I mean, that's one of the things that makes these movies so enjoyable is because they catch the mistakes in and they're so much fun. It's silly.
Of a fucking.
What?
Okay.
Exploitation screwed up the time again. I put it for 2 hours and now they had it for 30 fucking minutes. We only got an hour fucking left once it goes off the fucking air into fucking.
Okay. That's all right. You know what? We can split this into two episodes. It's no big. It's no big at all because there's fun. And I'm having fun anyway. So, is that all right with you guys if we split into two episodes?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, then let's do it.
The producer is an idiot, or Blog Talk is. I haven't figured out which.
No, it's not used to. Trust me, we like you a lot. So.
No, tell him, Carl. This is the second time this week this has happened.
Right, that's true. Because it happened on my show too.
Maybe that's something
call
with
an hour.
Yeah.
Maybe it's something to do with the website itself because. I don't know. For some reason, I've been having problems doing the linking. But that's just like, the link that you sent me this evening to put out worked just fine, but before that, I have a rough time every once in a while.
Don't worry, I will not do this screw up on Sunday. But, yeah, we can just continue talking about Burdock Gordon. Yeah, he loved this guy in movies because he made, like, the spider, and he loved his footage of getting two Gila monsters and putting them in the jungle and letting them wrestle.
That just spurred getting an idea for an episode down the line. Classic dinosaur movies. Not counting Godzilla, like Dinosaurus and all those. We'll have to do that, definitely. I think that'd be awesome. So, all right. So let's move on to another one from the 50s. If you guys, one of my all-time favorites, because it's just so completely inept dumb, is Monster from Greentown. It's one of those movies that just makes you facepalm every 3.5 minutes. But that's what makes it fun. Every copy I've seen of this movie, it's all washed out, sound off, and the monster from Greentown are giant mutated wasps that are basically like giant wasps that have no legs, but still they slither around. And their wings, these little tiny things that they're taking out by grenades. Still fun.
Yeah. And don't forget the main thing about wasps.
They sting. And their ass.
No,
they
don't like wasps. Yeah, well, I was going to say they don't like Mexicans.
They don't like anybody. Wasps are just yellow striped assholes.
Nice.
Well, can you think of any other bug that would sting a person, an animal, or anything for no freaking reason?
That's true. Very true. Well,
wonder why haven't they done that many killer wasp movies? They've done all sorts of killer bees, but not killer wasps.
You've got the Wasp Woman, and then you've got Jim Mercy's Wasp Woman, and then you've got Dragon Wasps, newer CG movies with wasps. They're still assholes, though.
Now, that does bring up a question.
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead.
Yeah. Go ahead, Steven.
What I'm going to say is those cheap, crappy effects that Burdock Gordon used in the 50s and all of the other ones look a hell of a lot better than the CGI monsters we see in our low-budget monster films, bug films nowadays.
Oh, absolutely.
Especially by the sci-fi.
So I just wanted to ask a quick question because
sure.
I hadn't thought of this. Would you consider the Wasp Woman?
Yes, I would.
See, that's a weird one because she's what?
Yeah,
she turns into a Wasp Woman.
Yeah. Well, it depends on which version you watch. If you watch the 50s version, she turns into a giant female wasp, period. It isn't until the 90s remake with Jennifer Rubin that she turns into some kind of wasp monster.
Mm-hmm.
She's pretty attractive. Yeah. Okay. She's very attractive. Looking at it. Now, somebody mentioned Mexicans in Mexico, so let's head down south of Mexico for a moment and talk about the black scorpion. Now, the black scorpion, I would say this is an essential motion animation movie for anyone to see because it's got Willis O'Brien. He worked on the black scorpion itself, and it's dark, it's fun, and it's got Truman Scorpion. Truman Scorpion, that's awesome. And it's pure chaos through this one little area in Mexico because there's a volcanic eruption. You've got giant bugs. You've got critters running around in caves threatening people. It's kind of an annoying kid, unfortunately. It's like one of those kids that just want to say, please leave them away. But that's the only drawback to this one. And sure, it stars Richard Denning. So it's definitely
Yeah, that is a good. It's one of those that whenever I read it in the Malton Guide or any other ones, they say just your boring, generic monster movie. And I was like, eh. And then when I got to see it, I'm like, Jesus Christ, are these bugs scary as hell?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Oh, I love this. And also, Mystery Science Theater 3000 does a version of the film. The only place I was actually able to find it legally is on Shout Factory, on Shout TV, made by Shout Factory. They're the ones who print out them if you're Kane now. So definitely support them. Buy a copy of the Scorpion. It's awesome. And, oh, gosh, we got so many more in the 50s. We've got a monster challenge the world with about giant snails, which is, you think it would be slow moving for the snails, but it's not. It's actually really good.
They have to be slow moving. They're snails, right?
This is true, but they're really, really big snails. Now, there's a movie called Cosmic Monsters, which I have never seen. And I've seen a picture of a woman being terrorized by a giant spider, and it's really, really funny. But have you seen that one?
No, that one I don't remember.
Yeah. You've seen it. Remember that Russian film with the great effects that Roger Corman bought from Russia and made like three films out of it?
That was a space film. That wasn't a giant bug film. That was a space film.
Let me finish. They encounter a giant space spider on the planet.
Right.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay, right. And that's what they used the footage for spider. Okay, gotcha. Okay, so I've been yakking about my favorites in the 50s. What about you guys? I mean, got any ones you want to talk about specifically?
Well, I could talk about one of my favorite guilty pleasure movies, and I sort of have to put a little preamble. When I was living in New York, I had a friend of mine who lived in a basement apartment with seven other people, and the place was full of roaches and water bugs, and water bugs the size of a friggin' rat. I'm not kidding. And so every time I see Joe's apartment, I think of that particular. Now, they're not killer bugs, but they are roaches, and they do sing Busby Berkeley numbers, and it's a stupid movie. It's totally stupid, but I just love it because every time I see it, I think of that apartment and all the craziness that went on in that apartment. So that's one of my favorite, silly movies.
You mean the movie that's like a 200% ripoff of Twilight of the Cockroaches?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Only much funnier and with Busby Berkeley numbers and choreography, which Twilight of the Cockroaches does not have.
Right, and the funny thing is about Joe's apartment is that it actually started as promotional short advertisements for MTV. Then it got really popular on MTV, some money boost, and they made Joe's apartment. And we all know what happened to MTV now. They don't play music. Anyway. Yeah, Joe's apartment is just a lot of fun.
It is. It really is. But is it stupid? Good lord.
The shorts are 200% better. There's this one that shows the cockroaches watching a video, a movie of somebody going around exterminating bugs. They're like, oh my god, this is horrible. Holy crap, is that Frank?
Yeah. So,
it's one of those where took a good idea as a shorts and made it too dang long.
I agree, but still, I like the film. And as I said, it's when I watch it, I think of that particular apartment. because there were roaches everywhere. In fact, a friend of mine did a short film in that apartment of Washington crossing the Delaware, and he put all the roaches on soap and filmed it in the sink. And I'm not joking.
I don't know if the FCC would be cool with that.
If I'm going to pick my guilty pleasure, let's see. I'm trying to think of it would be a movie where a cat innocently walks into a room and sits down on this prop, not knowing that it's rigged to have fire shoot out of it.
I know exactly where you're going with this one.
And when they shoot, when they let it off with a big brrr, that cat jumps. And that would be bugged by
William Castle.
William Castle. Yeah. This is one of those movies like, you're like, are they trying to be serious? Are they trying to be silly? I hope they're trying to be silly.
I like the movie. I really do. I think it's a lot of fun. I saw that in the theater. I was such a big William Castle fan, and that was the last film that he did as a director. And I was in, I think, high school. That came out in, what, 75, I think?
Yeah, I think. Yeah. Well, you should know you're the 70s guys. Don't you be pulling that I think stuff on me. About the 70s?
Well, I can't remember if it was 74 or 75, but it was one of those 2 years.
Yeah,
but yeah, it's a fun little movie.
Yeah, and the basic plot is, I think it was earthquake opens up a fissure, and a giant prehistoric, giant like the size of your hand, not as in like going to eat your going to eat like cities, cockroaches, that fart fire. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, prehistoric,
and they can spell
giant
too.
Cockroaches, that fart fire and can spell. It's available on DVD. And the first time I saw it, it was on, I swear to you, I saw it on TNT, 3 o'clock in the morning. I was like, oh my God, awesome. I think it was a double feature of Gargoyles. Oh, I was in love. Gargoyles and
I've got another one that Yenza probably even forgot about. What's Sunday show about, Carl?
Okay, what?
What's Sunday show about?
Sunday show is about George Romero.
And let's go back to about 82 in this anthology film.
Now I know what you're talking about. Oh, that's friggin' awesome. Oh, is that
awesome.
Yeah,
the last episode of Creepshow, they're crawling up on you.
Oh.
I got to
tell a story about this. So I was in the theater watching this. And if you see the last shot before the last thing that happens in that episode, there's a shot of E.T. Marshall. And the way that Romero puts it all together, you know that that's a fake E.T. Marshall. You know it. And it's just like he holds it long enough. And I yelled out, do it, George! Do it! And then they just come out of that thing, and it is just friggin' brilliant. It is one of the best time gags I've ever seen. Seriously.
Now, the cockroach erupting from somebody?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
And what's funny is that's not the grossest moment of the story. To me, it's like when he's pouring out the cereal and his cockroach is all in his food and all that.
Oh, when he does the smoothie.
Oh, yeah. A cockroach smoothie?
Yeah.
Yeah. You've never seen Creepshow?
I've seen parts of it. I still kind of... I've never really gotten to the end of it just yet, but I'm going to eventually.
Well, you have to, because that's the episode we're talking about.
Oh, I know.
Yeah, and Creepshow is just fun.
Oh, it's a blast. It's a blast. I love that movie.
Let me see here. Creep show. Oh, yeah. Yep, it's sitting right there. Got it. I'll have to plug them in later tonight. Definitely take a watch of it. Oh, God.
Yeah, that story just is vivid.
And what they say is that they had over 100,000 roaches for that. And basically how they shot that is he's in a soundproof room. So you know, it's all glass and case. So that's where the roaches are. So they lead the roaches out, and, of course, they scatter. And you can't find one of them in that room. But then you pick up the phone, and you see this whole – thing of roaches like mimicking the phone.
Because that's what the real roaches, which is really crazy. But they're built to survive.
Yeah.
They're built to live.
And you know what you would have heard, Carl, if they would have had a sound thing in the soundproof room?
What?
Tom Savini screaming like a little girl. Oh, my God, they're coming out of the plunger. The plunger's back. Like, oh, my God, they're inside my shirt. Oh, my God, they're in my hair. Help.
He doesn't look like cockroaches, does he?
But we
really
can't forget about the one that's considered the all-time classic of the giant bug movie, and that's them. That was basically
the gold standard. Then it's like the Gojira of big movies.
The thing about them that I love is that they hold off on showing what them are, and the basic set of that is like set up is it's like a mystery. Like what's going on? What is this?
And what is
this?
Them?
What are them? Yeah. And, of course, that first iconic shot of the girl that you see at the beginning, and she yells out, "Them!" It's like, holy shit. I mean, it's really well done.
Oh, yes. And, I mean, it's one of those movies where you actually like the characters. And it's just, it really drags you in and doesn't let you go, just like the giant ants do. But, I mean, it's, of course it has to have atomic explanation of atomic testing for the giant ants and everything. And James Seymour, Edward Gwynne, James Arness is in it. I actually pulled out my copy. And, you know, there's...
Actually, I think it's James Whitmore in that movie, not James... Well, no, James Arness is in that too. Never mind. You're right.
Yeah. But he just plays a drunk lying in bed.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, and it's a very sad scene that it really tugs at my heartstrings every time I see it. I'm not going to ruin it, and I'm not going to spoil it. And like I said, you get really attached to a lot of characters in this film, and it's very well acted. The ants, for what they are made out of, giant mechanical ants, are amazing for that time period. Seriously. I think, you know, we've got CGI ants that are pretty cool, but these beat them into the crowd. They're that.
And if you can find some of the rare color photos taken on the set, they're even more gorgeous in color.
Yeah, they're. I've seen a couple of those. They're like a red tinged.
Really?
I remember
what
correctly.
What they did is when they made the eyes, they used that kind of glass that would change color whenever.
Oh, depending.
You know.
Right, depending on.
Yeah,
the,
depends on
yeah,
where the
gotcha.
Light was hitting it. Like the FX guy went to trouble to do that, and Scott Carl said the red and green stripes on them just made them look gorgeous. Then all of a sudden, filming this in black and white.
Let me see here. I'm getting Google is being really stupid. I was trying to pick up, look for pictures of what you're talking about.
Right.
And I'm getting pictures of American Ultra, the candles. Boy, Google's really screwed up right now. Anyway.
Google Photos is crap. I tried looking up a picture of giant bugs, and they had Andrew Divoff's Wishmaster today.
That's not even a... you're shaking my head. Anyway, yeah, but I cannot sing the praises of them enough. It's so good. My mom even likes it, and she's just like, you got to see them. Okay, so I watched them. Oh, my gosh, you're right, Boo. Seriously. And my mom, a.k.a. Boo, is very selective when it comes to her monster movies. But when she says monster movies from the 50s is good, it's really, really good. Like another example, she told me to watch The Haunting from the 1960s. Oh, so good. But anyway.
And I
have
a question for both of you guys. How come is it everything in the 50s that was doused in radiation, it made them bigger?
Well, that's not completely true. That's not completely true. You know, there's the...
I never said it was radiations in The Incredible Shrinking Man.
Yeah, but it was something. You know, that's what you said.
Yeah.
But the whole idea was, you know, people are afraid of nuclear power and what could happen and what's scarier than, you know, a big oversized ant or something that you know, are you going to shrink someone? Is that going to be scary? Now, they do that in the 70s actually quite well. But in the 50s, no, it was all about growth and things like that and giant bugs. And that was the whole thing in the 50s. I mean, have you ever counted, Doc, how many giant films, whether it be insects or men or Amazing Colossal Man or whatever the case, were in the 50s?
There were tons, but there's a reason for that. Because back in the late 40s, like 1949 into the beginning of the 50s, there were a lot of atomic tests going on. And one of the things that the government found was that atomic radiation can cause genetic mutation. Now, we're not talking severe to the point of, you know, Godzilla or whatever, but we're talking like babies born with a lot of health issues, missing limbs, of hydrocephalus, or water in the brain, you know, that type of stuff. And how radiation, this invisible force, can just break down tissues and do so much damage.
What's the movie you always talk about, The Conqueror? Steven, tell them about that.
Yeah. Well, what happened is that when Howard Hughes filmed that movie, Doc, the government didn't tell him that the desert area they allowed him to use was an atomic test site. So about 85% of the cast died of cancer.
That was the biggest one I forgot to mention, was cancer.
Yeah, and John Wayne got cancer from it twice.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
You know, John Wayne was also a smoker. Don't forget that, but yeah.
Yeah.
True.
But here's my second question. Carl, do you think there was one guy who's seen those movies like, well, if you expose yourself to radiation and things will get bigger, that he found a way to expose his willy to radiation and was sorely disappointed in the results?
I bet there probably was.
What do you think, Carl?
Well, you know what? I can't verify this, but, you know, Long John Holmes, man, he lived in Nevada. I can tell you that.
But
it
might
have worked. I don't know.
And if you watch the early movies, what was the only covering they gave the soldiers when they were doing the atomic test.
They gave them tarps.
They gave them goggles.
Just goggles, yeah.
Yeah, they just gave them, like, goggles. I was like, oh, don't worry, you'll be all right.
No, I won't, you jerks.
In a lot of those giant ant movies and stuff is really from us looking at that stuff and thinking, hey, that thing, they full of shit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm off. And, you know, it's pretty weird. Most of the giant or the killer insect and giant bug movies or giant anything movies have radiation involved, except for some of the ones in the 70s. Like Food of the Gods, that was actually, yeah, that was like an organic compound made by the planet. Empire of the Ants, that was toxic waste. Rodan, yes, is a killer bug movie. Because there are these creatures called Meganulons, which are like baby nymph dragonfly monsters that are prehistoric size in the film. They go around slaughtering people. It's not bloody or gory or anything, but it's kind of a shocker for, you know, a Toho movie from 1956 that starts out like a slasher film. Seriously, it's really cool. And
go ahead, Carl.
Well, no, you go ahead. You go ahead, Stephen. Go ahead.
No, I'm going to go into tarantula and about a little bit something about that. You can see what you're going to say, Carl.
Oh, okay, since you're going in tarantula, okay, which I love. Leo G. Carroll is God, okay? But before we get there, I need to mention the one line of dialogue in one of these, quote, monster movies that I think is the most brilliant pun I have ever heard in my life. Now, this comes from a movie called Matinee. Matinee is about a filmmaker, sort of based on Castle, who makes a movie called Nant. And he uses all the old, this is Joe Dante, and he uses all William G. Shalit and Morris Ankrum is in it and all these people. And so the guy has been exposed to, bitten by an ant and exposed to radiation, and he's turning into an ant, and he's about normal size at this point, man size. And his wife is visiting him, like, honey, you got to remember, you're a man, and you need to forget the insect inside of you. He goes, insecticide? Where?
Ooh, Carl, talking about Matt just made me remember one of the most important of radioactive insects. That would be the radioactive spider that bit Peter Parker.
Spider-Man. Yes, absolutely. Without that, we would not have Spider-Man.
Exactly.
Like four versions of Spider-Man.
Plus, how many comic book reiterations? Okay.
Yeah.
So,
what I'm going to is look at tarantula. Look how many atomic spheres there really is in that movie. One, there's a giant spider, which is cool, but Leo DiCaprio and the other guy get human deformities because of their exposure to the radiation.
Right. And they're trying to use radiation to work around the human. It's about feeding people, basically. They want to make sure there's no
right, hunger. They're trying to make the corn grow big so it'll feed everyone. That's the idea.
Right.
I think they do it with corn first, right? I think.
Corn. Yeah, we really never see it, but we do see a giant guinea pig, which is really, really cute. And
guinea pig. Yeah, I wanted to take him home. I love that giant guinea pig.
Oh, so cute. And Clint Eastwood actually shows up in Tarantula as a fighter pilot. You don't see his face, but you hear his voice. That's for sure.
I think this is actually his debut on film, anyway. I think he's been in TV shows beforehand.
Now, was Clancy before or after Revenge of the Creature? Because I know he was in Revenge of the Creature, too.
No, Revenge of the Creature was his first film.
Oh, okay.
With a mouse in his pocket.
It was Revenge, Tarantula, and then Them.
Yeah. Very good, very good. Okay. Very cool.
But my favorite part of Tarantula is where it shows the army and the heroes standing around a circle, like, I wonder where the spider is. Where is that spider at? And you just barely lift your eyes and look up over your shoulder, and it's just sitting up there on top of the hill just looking at them like they're the stupidest people in the world.
You get the look of YDS on his face. That's what we call you dumb shit. Now, Tarantula is a weird one to get, you know, to actually own. Because it's in, there's a DVD set with it called Universal Sci-Fi Classics, which also has the Devil Mantis. But if you want to get it on Blu-ray, the only Blu-ray of this thing I could find was imported from Spain, believe it or not. And it's Region 8. It does work. It's actually all region. It's Tarantula. Everything on the box is in Spanish. And you have to go into the options and set the language to English, and then you'll get to English, no problem. But it's, and the quality of it is gorgeous. So I definitely suggest hunting it down. You can find it on Amazon. If you want it on Blu-ray, I'm just saying, which I really did want it on Blu-ray.
Well, here's my thing about that. How many times have we gotten a Universal Monster movie series on Blu-ray?
This is currently the third to fourth. Actually, this is the fourth to fifth.
Yeah, Universal, put out some of your more obscure shit. Good God.
Yeah. I mean, there's the 8-pack Blu-ray, then there's the Euro 8-pack Blu-ray, and then there's the single Blu-rays, and then now they've got the universe, they've got the whole Legacy Collection, but they haven't made Creature from the Black Lagoon Legacy Collection in Blu-ray, which is ridiculous.
That's coming out close to October.
Okay, then that's acceptable.
And another giant big-ass set. Which they're calling Universal Monsters Complete.
Oh, they better throw in a couple extra movies because I'm really tired of pumping my money out for release after release after release.
But yeah, I mean, really, how many of us would want stuff that Universal owns like Tarantula, The Deadly Mantis, things like that?
Deadly Mantis.
It frustrates me. It's like, we've got money. We want to give it to you. Why don't you want us to give you money?
And sometimes, you know, finding the actual releases of movies that everyone, like, I can't find the Blu-ray of Deadly Mantis anywhere. But yet, I have to look through the bowels of Amazon to locate a copy of Tarantula from Spain says questionably that may or may not work, but thankfully it does work. And, you know, like, another one I just got, the 80s version of The Blob. Okay, there's the Twilight Time version, which I refuse to give my money to Twilight Time, so enough of that. So I had to dig through Amazon again and find an Australian release by a company called Umbrella for The Blob. So that's what I did. You know, it would be so nice if distributors here in the United States would actually go, hey, you know what? We've got some really good movies, really cool movies here. Let's, you know, throw them out to the public, maybe $5-$10 a Blu-ray. That would be phenomenal instead of, you know, just giving the rights to different countries. And, you know, which, like I said, you can get lucky occasionally get a good Blu-ray that works in the United States. And, you know, or like, companies like Twilight Time. Yeah, we've got the license. Oh, guess what? We're only pumping out 600. We're never going to do it again. Oh, yeah. 8 months later, we're pumping out another 600 because, oh, somebody signed it this time and it's $50 more. We're never going to do that again. Oh, wait. 6 months later, hey, here's another 50 copies. But guess what? This time, the Blu-ray is $500 because it's got two people signed it and the cover's in black and white.
Twilight Time Hoarders just amaze me. But here's one. When Criterion put out The Blob on Blu-ray and DVD,
yeah,
they tried their damnedest to buy the rights to The Blob remake to put on that damn set.
Yeah, the remake is damn good. The remake is really good.
It really is, but Twilight Time, they're like, oh, we want $4 million for it. And Criterion's like, yeah, okay, sure, not happening. And it's just, okay, I will admit, I have two Twilight Time Blu-rays, two of them, to finish off my Harryhausen collection. One of them is Mysterious Island, and the other one is First Men on the Moon. And, you know, it's $50
each. Oh, you didn't go into the real Herrera ones, then.
Well, like what?
Just two like stem bags.
She... Oh, I got those. I got those from Madman. Those are also Australian releases. Are those Australian releases or what?
I think so. Yeah, here's something from for you, Carl. They put out within the past month in all regions a Blu-ray set of the Sinbad films, all three of them.
Nice. Nice. For me, I want the one with Carolyn Monroe. That's it. Well, I take the early one too, but not the what's the third one called? Sinbad and the Eye of the Tiger.
Eye of the Tiger.
Yep.
Eye of the Tiger, and this movie is crap.
Okay, Carl, if you want to save up $49, if you want to save up $49 and get these through Amazon, you can get the Golden Voyage, the Seventh Voyage of Sinbad, American release. Golden Voyage of Sinbad, Australian. Sinbad and the Tiger, Australian, on Blu-ray, which do work in the United States on any player, for $49 total.
Nice.
Twilight Time set for like $150. It's so much work. It's worth getting weird imports, because occasionally they do work. You have to actually look in the description.
Right.
Oh, and to get back on subject, Doc, I'm sorry, I got a letter today from the Tarantula Defamation Society saying that if you, the party of the first part, mention any of the tarantula movies from the 70s, you will be sued for slander because tarantulas are tired of people thinking that they can kill people with their bite.
By the way, I need to just throw something out there because people won't think of this. But the Coffin Joe films, particularly At Midnight, I Will Take Your Soul, has that one great scene where all the tarantulas are crawling over the female lead. And that scared the living shit out of me, even when I saw it as an adult. You know, they're still scary.
You know, So, actually, I have a question before I move on. So, because of the timing thing, we're cutting off at 9 o'clock, and then we'll do the secondary call.
Steven?
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So we'll, I actually have a little tarantula story to tell everybody. I went out west to go visit my uncle, who lives in Missouri, and we stopped off. I went to visit him. I stayed the night, and we were going over to this place called Bennett Springs, which is about 3 hours south of where he lives, and it's a very nice trout fishing pond. There's trout fishing spring river that they stock every day with the trout. Now, you know, we're at this very, very nice rest stop, and we're sitting at a picnic table eating lunch, and he says to me, "Watch out, there's a tarantula near your foot." I'm like, "What? Tarantula? They can't tarantula. Okay, yeah, whatever. Because I think he's trying to spook me." So I'm wearing sandals, and I feel this little thing crawling over my foot. And I'm going, "That's a tarantula." But, yeah, take a look at your foot and don't freak out. Okay. I look down, and it is a tarantula crawling over my foot. Now, I can understand why the Tarantula Association wants everybody to know that tarantulas cannot kill you with their bite, because they do have venom. It'll cause bruising, it'll cause pain, it'll cause nausea, but unless you're allergic to it, it should not cause any major complication. I did not get bitten, but it was still pretty cool to have a tarantula crawling over my foot. Okay. There we go.
I had a friend who had a pet tarantula back in the 70s.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, never actually touched it, though. I did look at it.
I did. A girl had a pet tarantula. And, boy, she got all
excited. Isn't that what most girls say about dates with you, Carl?
Oh, I can tell you so many stories, it's not even funny. And most of them run away
but
screaming.
Yeah, I mean, to really seriously go back, I don't know why, but it seems like bees and tarantulas were like the killer bug of choice.
Well, because they're big and scary. And scary looking. That's probably why. I mean, you know, seeing a spider the size of a dinner plate that is alive naturally crawling after you, it's like, oh my God, I can understand it. I can definitely understand that. Ooh, that's scary.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, the big one when it comes to tarantulas and 70 probably was the TV movies, wouldn't you say, Carl? More than the theatrical ones.
Yeah, I know the one you're talking about. Deadly Cargo,
there's
right?
There's more than one. There's like Tarantula, the Deadly Cargo, the
Kingdom
Great Tarantula
Spider.
Attack. Yeah, Kingdom,
Kingdom
of the Spiders.
Spider.
God, that one scared the shit
really
out of me.
The Deadly Cargo one really scared the crap out of me. Excuse me. I'm still fighting some sinus. But yeah, and then of course, you know, when we get to arachnophobia too. Oh, good Lord.
If you don't mind, Doc, there was two movies that showed a bizarre. Yeah, there was only really two movies in this stream. And they were not about Carl's uncles, were they?
Well, you know, of course, you know, at least there was a rock group that was named after me. And that would
be
the Beatles. Because my last name actually does mean beetle in German, Kafer.
But what do you call the guy that married your uncle, Carl?
Not the guy. The woman that married my uncle would be an aunt.
Yeah, there's two very weird aunt movies that you love.
Well, there's one in particular. And that would be Phase 4. Phase 4 is a science fiction film, and what happens is there's a solar flare, and it does something. And you have this scientist that go out in the Arizona desert along with this other scientist who deals with communication. And they find that the ants, who are natural enemies, are talking to each other and communicating and working together. And let me tell you something. This movie is creepy as shit. And the reason is because the ants are regular size, and you've got micro photography of the ants working together, and it's just creepy, man. I love this movie. And then the original ending is very 2001.
Yeah, I'll be honest with you. I feel that Phase 4 should have definitely gotten an Academy Award for the camera work and the development of new lenses to the film on the ant stuff. It is beautiful. It's absolutely beautiful. You know, if you look at a David Attenborough documentary about insects nowadays, they use the same camera technology, except for now it's digital, that was used in Phase 4. And Phase 4 is the film that basically developed it and made it into everyday use for different documentaries.
Actually, let me go back on that a little bit. There was a film before that, which was sort of a mockumentary called The Hellstrom Chronicle. and they started with the micro photography on that one. The guy who directed that then worked on the micro technology for phase four and had even made it better at that point. Because Hellstrom Chronicle was 71 and phase four was 74.
Oh, okay. But it definitely helped in that, so that's for sure.
It's a movie I recommend highly.
Go ahead.
No, that's all I was going to say, that I recommend it highly. It's one of my favorite films of all time. I love that film. Freaking love that film. Phase four, people, watch it.
And the other film that I know Carl loves, all I got to say is Mr. Big and Joan Collins.
Ooh! Empire of the Ants. It's so bad, and it's so good.
It is. It's giant ants kidnap people to work in sugar mines.
I love it.
I'm raising my finger at the moment, going, "Bleh, you don't mind."
No, you're
sugar.
Raising sugar cane.
Oh, okay. I thought it was sugar mines, but yeah, you're raising. Excuse me, I'm sorry about that, guys.
Yeah, you're raising cane. Sugar cane.
Yeah.
John Lithgow should have had a part in it.
Yeah, it's definitely a fun one. And available from Shout Factory is a double feature with, I can't see it from here because I'm nearsighted, The Withdrawal of Satan, a snake movie. Woo-hoo-hoo-hoo.
Mm. I think that was actually pretty good.
Withdrawal of Satan? Oh, okay.
But to keep with staying in ants, there was a TV movie called It Came from Lakewood Manor about killer ants. What was the movie that Burt Lancaster did with the fire ants attacking his plantation?
Oh, what the hell was that? I forget. It wasn't that good.
But that one takes a long while to get to the ant scenes, Doc, but when it does, damn. Right, Carl?
Really?
Yep. But it's a lot of soap opera before that. Trust me, a lot of soap opera.
But once it gets to the ants...
I can deal with soap opera as long as people get nibbled on by ants. So, there.
And Indiana Jones and the Crystal Skull had some killer ants.
Oh, don't know. No, 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 no. Sorry. No.
Oh, uh-oh.
Hey, I know it's bad, but I'm just bringing it in as historical. They had killer ants in it that ate people.
This is true, but it's just so... I'm sorry. That movie was just... Pardon me, it was just so... God damn, stupid. I'm sorry. There was, you know, in these movies... these
You've been hanging around me too much.
There's some discernible type of threat. You need to just go, hey, okay. This is kind of scary. These CGI ants were so bad and so dumb that it's like, okay, there's no threat. Oh, they ate a Nazi. That's cool, but there's no threat. Oh, grumble, grumble, grumble. I'm good.
It's a long way from a room with 100,000 roaches.
This is true. This is very true. So, anywho, right, so, yes, moving on. Are we going to be going, or is the timing thing, or what should we do?
Yeah, let's call it a night at 9:04. I'm pissed off about this.
Okay. All right, so we're gonna call it a night, and we will be back for the next show, and we'll be back to bug you. That was a good one, Steve. With our next show, and then we'll be hitting up such classics, air quotes, as Starship Troopers, Giant Spider Invasion, and all sorts of other fun pre-patrol aids. So,
and don't forget Big Ass Spider. You gotta talk about Big Ass Spider.
Yep. And don't let the bed bugs bite. Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Good night.
That's it, man. Game over, man. It's game over.
Open the circuit to the wave motion gun. Open the circuit.
Let the chamber pressure increase.
All the ship's energy is now in the wave motion gun.
I doubt anyone here would recognize civic virtue if it reached up and bit you in the ass.
Oh, did I hurt your feelings?
Well, the Magneto's right. There's a war coming.
Danger, Will Robinson. Danger.
You sure you're on the right side?